right, it's another Wednesday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk FM 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass with you again on another Wednesday night, actually. We are taking your phone calls, as always. 333-2665. Lots going on tonight. We head towards another NFL weekend, and we're going to have all kinds of NFL broadcasts here on WGCL over the next several days. Tomorrow night, the battle of 2-12 teams, Tennessee and Jacksonville, fighting it out for a draft pick in the opposite direction. But we'll have that for you tomorrow night, and we'll tell you more later about the weekend. But Saturday and Sunday, we have doubleheaders here on WGCL, so plenty of NFL football all weekend long. Of course, we'll have the Colts starting 3:30 on Sunday as they go down to Dallas to face the Cowboys. No word about DeMarco Murray playing just yet, but we'll talk a little bit about all that and look forward to the Colts trip in a little while. But first, we head towards a weekend game that may tell Indiana Hoosier fans a lot more about their basketball team than maybe they know right now. We know what Louisville did to them. We know what Indiana was able to do and not do in that game, but how does it equate to somebody who's maybe not one of the top five teams in the country? Butler, very good at this point in time, not quite Louisville's level, but a solid team playing awfully well, playing within themselves, knows what they need to do, defensively plays well, really hits the boards really hard, not a great shooting team. They know they're not particularly potent on offense, but they clamp it down on the other end, and they clamp down on the boards on both ends. So we will see that, of course, focuses on one major weakness for the Hoosiers right now, and that is hitting the boards. But Glass, looking at this Butler team, again, you talk about the Butler way, all these kinds of things. The Butler way was maybe a little bit more explosive when they had some better offensive players, but they've always managed to handle the defensive side, the gritty stuff, and handle the boards. And first and foremost, the Hoosiers have been talking a lot about it in recent weeks, hitting the boards, getting better. They're going to have to get better if they want to walk out of Indy with a victory, because Butler will hit it on them.
Yep. And the Bulldogs get after it. And the Butler way, Dave, it's not really about scoring. It's about doing your job. It's about doing the little things right and doing them right often. It's about taking care of the basketball. It's about making the right pass. It's about making the extra pass. It's not about, we're going to run some kind of explicit offense or anything like that. It's not like Princeton where, you're always going to get back cuts, right, and everything else. Right. It's more about you do your job. When you're called on, you step in and you do what you're asked to do, not try to do something you're not out there to do.
No, the offense is pretty basic stuff. Plays. I mean, it's high pick and roll. It's, it's the dual picks at the, top of the line.
It's find the right guy. Yeah. It's make sure you get it to the hot hand. And all these things add up over time, and the system works. So when guys come off the bench, they know what they're doing. You don't have to worry about a guy coming in and, Kellen Dunham's got 20 points. He's not coming and start shooting the ball. He's going to come in and try to find the guy that's hot and get after that. But what Butler does is they get into you. They get you uncomfortable. And if you don't believe me, ask North Carolina. North Carolina has 2-1 the talent Butler has. They got 15 more All-Americans than Butler has. And Butler played harder than they did. Now, it's a noon game in the Bahamas. I get all that. That's fine. There's an opportunity there. Butler took it. They didn't say, well, woe is us. We're playing North Carolina. They went out there and they handed them their lunch. And Butler has done that to many teams before. Butler has given teams problem over the years, not because they're an explosive outfit. They give teams problems because they don't give them extra possessions. They don't give them extra shots on the offensive glass. And that's why they're in a lot more games and they're getting blown out. What Butler struggles to do, Dave, is if they don't shoot it very well, because they don't lock you down defensively. They play really good principle defense, but it's not a shutdown system because they don't have maybe the athletes, maybe the quickness 1 through 8 or 9 that a North Carolina, where they can rely on. If it's a bad night for Carolina or Duke or something, they can rely on their talent a little bit. Sure. Butler doesn't always have that luxury, but they find the right guys to get the ball in the basket. They find ways to get rebounds. They get every loose ball that's out there, and that makes it uncomfortable. Indiana has played well against teams like Michigan and teams like Grand Canyon, who don't get up and get in you and get after you and bump you on every screen and rub you off on things like that. So Saturday's game is going to be very interesting, because the issue is going to be, if Butler is grabbing rebound after rebound, well, where's Indiana going to get other chances, other points? Because the Hoosiers haven't been taking the ball to the goal as frequently as you'd like to shoot a ton of free throws against better, the more solid teams. The rebounding, I think, is going to be a challenge. It's always going to be a challenge, because I don't think there's anything you can do in finals week that will take you from a decent rebounding team to all of a sudden a really good rebounding team, unless you get the effort from everybody. And sometimes That does happen, and it can happen. There's no question about it. But when you look at this Butler team, you got a guy like Roosevelt Jones, who's their second leading rebounder at 6'4", 227. Mm-hmm. He can guard all five positions. Who's the Woods kid? The Woods kid's a senior. He's 6'9".
Yeah, he's the biggest kid.
And he's a big rebounder. And he knows his job is to rebound. He's getting eight rebounds a game. That's his deal. But, again, Charbas isn't going to overwhelm you at 6'7", 205. Barlow's not going to overwhelm you. But they run their stuff. They're mm-hmm. patient. They don't shoot themselves in the foot as much, but as we've seen at Tennessee, as you saw with Oklahoma, this team is not the most potent offensively. So if it goes cold for them, Indiana's going to have to hit some shots like they always do against just about everybody else. And I don't think anybody scored over 70 points against Butler, and that includes North Carolina. So there is that layer of slowing it down, being deliberate, not giving teams a bunch of extra possessions to go out and score a ton of points. Now, Indiana, even against Louisville, Dave, gave them their toughest defensive day at 74, even though it was a 20-point loss. So you've got, again, the team strength, the offense, going against another team strength, which is pace and, again, that balance on defense.
No, the highest scoring opponent against Butler 69. Is 59. Well, a win, I guess. Oklahoma beat them, and they scored 59. Tennessee scored 67.
Yeah, Carolina
looks
had
like
69.
67 would be the top. 66 for Carolina.
66 for Carolina, okay.
Would be the next. Look, I mean, Tennessee took them a heck of a lot more seriously in the second half than maybe North Carolina did.
Well, Tennessee started making shots, too. That was the other thing. That goes in.
That's a home game for Tennessee. That's a big game for Tennessee. You got the ranked Butler coming in. I don't care what the name is. You see the ranking, and the kids are going to take it seriously, and they did that. But it does bring up the other side of the coin, and that is, in this game, there is an offensive side of this thing also. And can Butler turn Indiana from a top 10 team offensively, arguably, in these offensive efficiency markers, into a team that looks like they can't handle it? I don't know. Louisville's one of the best, if not, I think they're actually the best in the defensive deficiency rankings right now in the nation. They held them to 74 points. And that's with 19 turnovers forced.
Well, the other side of that coin.
That's the interesting thing, because that's the strength-on-strength battle to see who wins it.
And then the other issue is, since Indiana is one of the worst defensive teams in college basketball.
Yeah, well, they're not good.
Well, Butler's got guys that can shoot it. They got guys that can shot. Well, can we get them healthy? Eastern Washington got 88 on the Assembly Hall court.
Eastern Washington's a good offensive team.
Again, Indiana's played some teams that have been bad and scored 70-some points.
We've made some bad offensive teams look good before. And, maybe not all this year, although there's been a couple of them. But, on the other side, I mean, it's call it weakness against weakness, if you will, but there is that side of the ball also. And that's part of the equation. We keep hearing, if this guy gets this or if this guy gets that. I say it again, it starts with your best athletes on the perimeter, which is what you have, athletes on the perimeter. They don't have to be spazzes out there, but they've got to be better about allowing penetration, in my opinion.
Yep, and Butler doesn't have a ton of guys that are going to break you down off the dribble out there. Kellen Dunham's more of a spot-up shooter than he is a guy that puts the ball on the deck and tries to take you to the hole. He'd rather shoot jump shots. Barlow, decent penetrator. He's not overly quick. Yogi shouldn't have any problem. Yogi shouldn't have any problem with anybody's quickness, as good laterally as he is. And when you look at Jones, he's a bull in a china shop. Woods is a skinny kid. Charbas, I mean, they got some nice role players, Dave, and they have balance, and that's what it seems always to be their strength, is they have a couple guys that can shoot it, a couple guys that can handle it, a couple athletes here and there, and you put that all together where they're all on the same page defensively, and they make a conscious effort not to turn it over, and they limit their mistakes. That's how Butler has been good for a very long time, and it's been that system, I think, that might give Indiana some problems, not mainly the individual players.
There's a couple key matchups in this game in particular, and we will talk about those when we get back from the break. 2:30 on Saturday is time for Indiana versus Butler up in Indianapolis, the first game of the Crossroads
Clocks
Classic.
Clocks Sports 1. Remind yourself of that.
There you go. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. All right, you're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is a phone number. Again, we've got a big week and weekend of NFL football here on WGCL. We'll talk about the Colts at the bottom of the hour and start that off by telling you all about our weekend of NFL football. It is chock full of stuff starting tomorrow night, so stay tuned to hear all that and to hear some Colts talk also. But we're sticking with the hardwood for now. 333-2665 is the phone number. Key matchups before the Indiana-Butler game, you got to start with the guy who missed, I believe, all of last year for Butler because, as you mentioned, he's their second-leading rebounder. He's their third-leading scorer. He's their top assist guy at 6'4".
He's and, a do-everything guy.
A bowling ball.
And he's the best defender. Don't forget that part.
And he's awfully good there. He's a big physical guy. He shoots it.
He's not a very good shooter.
But
he's a scorer.
He does get inside, and he gets people, the right people, the ball. Roosevelt Jones is the matchup. So there's your question for Indiana. You know, again, they like to change defenses. They like to move things around. That you'd be surprised if they stick in a zone the entire time, although that might be their best choice for a lot of the game. But if not, what do you do with Jones here? Because the ball's going to be in his hands. This isn't a situation where he just happens to be in the middle of the defense and every once in a while and just happens to get assists out of it. They put it in his hands and make him and have him run the offense.
They do, and Barlow helps out with that as well. So they have options, and good teams have options, David. They shouldn't be one-dimensional, and that's what some bad teams that you see fall into that category are teams that struggle where they can only, you know, if this guy doesn't have the ball, they struggle to move it, and that's part of their system. They've got guys, usually bigger guys, that can step out and shoot jumpers as well. You've seen that over the years with Howard and Smith and those guys that can get out and knock it down. So what Indiana has to do, I don't know what they're working on this week. I know finals never helps in this schedule or this time, but the rotation out of zone, the rotation in demand, the changing of defenses, all of that stuff, it's a general awareness from this team. And I don't think it's, again, something you can solve in a week, but it has to start getting better. You have to see guys rotating better. You have to see guys with their heads on a swivel and better footwork and better positioning, because Butler's going to watch the tape and they're going to see, well, how did Indiana give up 88 to Eastern Washington? How did Indiana give up 94 to Louisville? And those weren't, remember, Louisville had four fast break points. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's mm-hmm. it. Four. So the other 90, they got in half-court sets. Whether we like it or not, that's a different thing. But Butler, again, their patience, their discipline is what's going to help them. And Jones sharing the ball with Dunham, sharing the ball with Barlow, sharing the ball with Woods, and around the horn, those are the things that makes Butler tough to guard because they don't depend on one guy. Now, late in the shot clock, if it's on the perimeter, it's going to Dunham. If it's on the bounce, it's going to Jones. That's not hard. Who for Indiana is going to step up if it's either in zone or in man and either accept that assignment or, mm-hmm. again, you're guarding an area. Can you identify the shooters? Do you know who your shooters are? You saw in the Louisville game, especially, the guards started hitting shots. Indiana had a hard time identifying them out of a zone where to hit shots. They had a hard time identifying 6'8", 240-pound Montrezl Harrell. He had 8 dunks or 7 dunks, whatever.
You mean the All-American?
Yeah, the guy that's bigger than anybody on our team times 2, and those guys were getting lost.
Doesn't bode well for our production against Roosevelt Jones now, does it?
Those are the things that you hope they've improved on, and what do you take away? Indiana's defense in a zone, you're looking to take away what? What do they always say when a team plays zone? You have to shoot them out of
right.
it. Well, Louisville didn't. Louisville got in the gaps. They penetrated. They ran the high pick and roll.
Inside.
And they got layup after dunk after layup mm-hmm. after 5-footer. So that has to change as well. But to slow Butler down, again, they don't need 29 offensive rebounds like they got against North Carolina. Why give them extra possessions? They'll kick it back out. They'll look for guys and knock it down. So Indiana's going to have to play a clean game. Those 4 turnovers that you talked about, that's great. Why were there only 4 turnovers? Well, one, it was bad defense from the other side.
Yeah.
But the good news was there was a lot of good decisions made by Indiana players. So did they learn from that? Is that what's going to happen? Butler averages 12 turnovers a game. That's about normal. That's not great. It's not terrible.
Right.
It's not out of there. But I don't think Butler's going to get up and down and run with you. Indiana would love to run more, but why doesn't Indiana get as many chances to run? Well, if you don't have rebounds, you don't have the ball, you can't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So those are things that the Hoosiers have to work on. I think if Butler's going to win this game, Dave, they're going to shoot it pretty well from outside. That's kind of their calling card. If they can get Dunham hot, as Dunham goes, they usually go. He was ice cold in the second half against Tennessee, and look what happened. A 12-point lead turns into a 12-point loss. That's a 24-point swing with one guy not being able to do it. Jones isn't the greatest shooter as well.
Right.
He hasn't shot
one from 3-point.
He shouldn't because he can post up anybody any size. Right. He's quick, and he's big and strong. So if I'm Indiana and want to take something away, we haven't really seen Indiana do that. Remember, Louisville had 3 guys with 20 or more points.
Mm-hmm.
Make Dunham frustrated. Don't let him get going because he's too good of a shooter to get into it. So Butler, their quiet offensively, they averaged 72 points a game, but they played a couple dogs in there that inflated that number. So don't look at that stat and say, oh, geez, that's a team that's going to do it. And Butler doesn't shoot foul shots very well.
If you're Indiana and you're looking at this and you know offensively they want to get up and down the floor, they're not going to suddenly try to slow this down just because they're playing a team that wants to slow it down. They want to get up and down the floor. But let's say defensively, if you're going to err one way or another, do you err on getting out on Dunham and Barlow, or do you err on getting down underneath and not letting Jones have a free pass into the middle of the zone?
Threes are harder to make than twos. And if the guy hits two or three twos, basketball's a game of adjustments. You're going to have to adjust. But, you know, Montrezl Harrell getting seven dunks didn't help anything. And Chris Jones and Terry Rozier hitting 10 threes didn't help anything. But
that's what I'm saying. You don't want Butler to have what drives them offensively when it does drive them.
Nope.
Because it doesn't do it very often. But when it does, all of a sudden they're scoring more than they usually do. Don't give them that.
But we just haven't seen Indiana take anything away against good teams. That's been the tough part.
Well, you said it. I mean, let's be fair. It's not a good defensive team.
No.
Can it get good? Look, I mean, there's the two questions. One, can it get good or at least decent? And two, if it doesn't get really good, can it rely on its offense to take it out of there? I still don't entirely know in my own brain whether it's better or worse to be a really good offensive team or a really good defensive team. I understand you'd like balance. I get that.
I get that. In this day and age, you have to have offense.
I think that's where it is.
Offense is hard against
some of the better defensive teams, but you've got to be able to put it in the basket.
Because you can have multiple guys that can put the ball in the basket. You might not have multiple defensive standouts, but if you can do both, like Wisconsin scoring 90 and giving up 40, they do it both ways. The interesting thing about Butler, if you look back through it, they had 19 turnovers against North Carolina and beat the snot out of them.
And didn't shoot it well either.
They beat the
snot. I think they shot like 38%.
They were 30% from the field and 32% from three.
30%?
They were 22 of 72 for 30.6%.
And had 29 offensive rebounds.
See,
that's the absurd number.
It is. And they only had 11 assists, so a lot of what they're creating is off the dribble. Their best assist game was against Maine and Kennesaw State, so that tells you who they prey on as well. And, again, their worst turnover performance, 19 against North Carolina, won the game. The only other game they have over 11 was Maine in the opener and 14 against Tennessee, interestingly enough.
That's offensive rebounds?
That's turnovers.
Turnovers.
So their biggest turnover number since Carolina, that was a six-game span, was a loss at Tennessee. Hmm. So they didn't shoot it well and they turned it over. But what Indiana doesn't do, as we saw with the six Grand Canyon turnovers,
turn people over.
Yep. And if this is the week, which I doubt it will because it's finals week, and you're too close to the Big Ten season, you got to see a wrinkle at some point, don't you? Indiana forcing some tempo, changing some things up.
You just go all triangle and two?
No, maybe a little half court 1-3-1 where you get some guys with long arms out jumping and making it uncomfortable. Just get Butler uncomfortable. You've seen what uncomfortability does. When you can't run what you want to do, that's when people make bad decisions, or you force them to make bad decisions. And that's what the Hoosiers can hope for. The other thing Indiana has to hope for, Dave, is quite simply they have to shoot the ball really well. We haven't seen much of a plan B. If the shooting isn't going in, it hasn't been a lot of you'd like to get out and run fast break. Sure, no question about it. Can you beat Butler up and down the court? Right, it starts with rebounding. Remember, Carolina, a team that loves to run and get after it, scored 66 points because they couldn't get the rebounds and get after things. James Blackman Jr. has to be normal. He's got to get his 19 points a game.
He's not going to have a 2-for-15 stretch from threes forever, you wouldn't think. But
I will promise you he will not go 1-for in that game on Saturday.
I hope not. I'd rather he not.
You need some help from the bench as well. And you need to make Butler uncomfortable. And if Indiana's not going to do it offensively, we talked about this on Monday. Indiana makes people uncomfortable by the rate at which they score. Mm-hmm. So they've got to take the better shot, and if they shoot in the 55% range, they're not going to lose very many games this year, Dave, home or away. But it's just when that shot's not falling, where else do you go? Is it Hannah Perea? Is it Troy Williams? Is it Robert Johnson? Yes, yes, and yes, because I think the more balanced Indiana is, the harder they are to guard, and usually that percentage of field goals goes up.
Well, the second matchup I was looking at is maybe at least slightly under the radar, and it is the big man for Butler, Cameron Woods, against Emmett Holt and Hannah Perea, who has...
Yeah, and throw Colin Hartman into that, and throw Hotzel into that, everybody.
But Perea in particular has shown flashes here and there, and you see a couple more, I think, every game, but you still aren't sure on the rebounding or on the defensive side of the ball. And ultimately, what he has to become for this team, or somebody behind him has to become for this team is the better rebounder. I mean, Troy Williams, I think, has to do it too. Don't get me wrong. You mentioned Hartman and Holt. They've all got to contribute to it. But ultimately, it's the big guy. I mean, that's what it comes down to. The big, most athletic guy you got out there who's going to be stuck in the middle of the floor most of the time. I'm not saying he has to outwork Cameron Woods all night long, but he's certainly got to get some plays off him. Well, he's got to get some of the
better. The other part about Woods is, too, he's big and long. So he's very similar to Perea. So it's not going to be one of those nights where you can rely on your athletic ability just to grab some rebounds.
Because you're Jones, just a better athlete.
Well, Jones right. is going to be in everybody's business as well. And then mm-hmm. you've got Woods with long arms at 6'9". Hey, that's the same thing we say about Perea. Hey, look at how long, look at the guy's wingspan. He's well, they good, got yeah. one too. Mm-hmm. So who's going to be the guy that gets in better position? Who's going to be the guy that works a little bit harder? Well, Woods is a senior. He's been doing this for, again, over 3 years. Hannah Perea is just getting his real first stretch of games right. at the college level. So, again, that's where coaching for me comes in. Do you see Hanner doing the same things he's been doing, or do you see him improving in his positioning, improving, or does he get shot block happy again?
Right.
These are the things that are very interesting about this matchup because it is a difference of opinion. And the other thing, Butler's not going to be worried about playing Indiana. Oklahoma, North Carolina, Georgetown. Let's keep going.
They're long
Northwestern.
Past,
they've played yeah, every, this year.
They're long That's past wide-eyed in this sort of game. What's interesting about that matchup to me is, it's probably a little unfair to judge Hunter how he played against the all of the guys for Louisville up front because they're deep.
But I thought he played well big. More than he played poorly.
And when he was in there, he comported himself. He did a decent job. But this, to me, for an entire game, is a little bit more of a judgment game because, as you mentioned, you got the senior, similar size, guy who hits the board's really crazy. You want to talk about where Hanner can be going into the Big Ten season, especially on the boards, but also can he impose a little bit of an offensive game that he seems to be gaining confidence in? Can he do something? Can he get Woods out of the game? Can he get two fouls on him in the first 4 minutes of the game and get him out of there for a little while and see if Indiana can take advantage of that? There's a lot that's intriguing about that matchup to me because of where it could show Hunter is going, because not everybody we're playing this year is Montrezl Harrell. There's going to be a couple guys that are awfully good.
There's
awfully,
not.
Awfully good. But this guy is going to be closer to what we're going to see most of the nights, and he's pretty darn good. It's a good judgment.
The key for Indiana is going to be if they trail, when they trail, because no one usually goes wire to wire in these games, if Butler starts to
take the air out of it,
pull out the wagon, no, then just start scoring on possessions, and then you find yourself down 8 or 10, mm-hmm. That'll be interesting to see, because you saw against Louisville, I didn't think there were a lot of bad shots against Louisville. They didn't go in. You know, Yogi missed a couple at the rim. Blackman had a couple wide open threes.
You had a little bit of banging your head against the wall trying to get it inside against the shot blockers, but you're right.
I mean, it wasn't terrible, but they have to go in, and that's the thing Butler will do, is they're not going to hurry up after you miss in an 8, 6, 8, 10-point game and go down there and crack off the first shot they look. They're going to make you grind it out for 30 seconds on defense and make sure you have your principles, make sure you have your help side, make sure that you're covering all your bases, and that's where they can get you. So that being said, Tennessee gave you a nice game plan. What do? You keep them off the glass, you hope they've got a cold shooting night, and then you make them chase you, because that's not a team. Same thing Oklahoma did. Team of athletes ran away from Butler. They had a bad shooting night, and again, Butler's not a team that seems like is going to come back from 8, 10, 12 down unless Dunham gets hot and knocks down a bunch of threes. And
prediction?
You can prevent that. I think Butler wins the game. Again, they have more experience. They've seen this level of competition a few more times than we have. I think it's a 63-58 kind of gross, grinded out brick game. A lot of rebounds. And those are two things that don't help Indiana.
If this is in the 50s, it's a Butler game. If IU gets it up to 70, I think they win. They are the better shooting team. I think Butler wins it, though. They're the grinded out veteran team right now. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple minutes. Stephen Glass with you in the Zone. 1 and AM 1370 WGCL. As we've been mentioning, plenty of NFL football here on WGCL this weekend. Tomorrow night, our normal Thursday night NFL matchup with Tennessee at Jacksonville, a battle of 2-12 teams at the bottom of the AFC South. We know them well as Colts fans. That'll start at 8 o'clock here on WGCL. Friday night, a big matchup here in town in high school basketball, rather. Number one Southport comes back to Bloomington to face the North Cougars, ranked number 11 right now, 4-1. Chalk Talk is 7 o'clock and tip-off 7:30 for that matchup. So Southport visiting Bloomington twice this year. And that'll be enough of that. We can be done with that after that. But plenty of NFL, as I mentioned, and then 3 days after that, Saturday, we have a unique to this year, and for the last couple of years, it's been off the books. But we got it here for you on WGCL. 4 o'clock, Eagles at Redskins, and then 7:45, we kick it over to San Diego at San Francisco, and that's a big game for San Diego on the road. San Francisco might just pack it in with Jim Harbaugh leaving town sometime soon. Sunday, the Colts play at Dallas. Pregame is at 3:30, kickoff at 4:30 for that. And then we'll take you to the evening game, which is Seattle at Arizona, another big one out there that could end up costing someone or clinching for someone a division, as Arizona leads that, I believe, by a game right now. And then Monday night, we take you to Monday Night Football with Denver at Cincinnati, and that'll be an interesting game also with playoff implications. So lots of NFL football here on WGCL and some high school basketball sprinkled in there on Friday, as we usually do. 333-2665 is a phone number, looking at the Colts heading down to Dallas. And of course, the big story for Dallas this year has been their offensive line, and in particular, the production because of it of DeMarco Murray. Excellent running back. He was excellent at Oklahoma. He's had a hard time staying healthy. And here he is now with a broken hand.
Keeping the ball in his hands, and this isn't going to help.
Exactly. Now he's got a broken hand. He had surgery a couple days ago. He, I think they said, sat out practice. Either way, they're not sure whether he will play or not play. The smart thing to do with a kid, with a running back who fumbles the ball and now has a broken hand, of course, would be to sit him, especially since you are probably a playoff team at this point. But you never know, because they can't take a week off, the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, they can, but we heard there at the NFL break, they're at the bottom of the hour. If he's not going to practice this week, he's not going to play. There's no other way around that in the NFL. You just you have to practice at some point. It's part of their league rules. You must participate at some point, because an NFL running back can't take 5 days off, and all of a sudden you start handing the ball off on game day Sunday. There's no way.
With a broken hand and a guy who fumbles with a broken hand.
None. They got enough. They got enough issues. The Cowboys haven't played very well at home either. That's kind of surprising, because usually in the NFL, teams load up on their home field and tend to struggle more on the road. The Cowboys are the only team unbeaten in pro football. The other teams, Dave, have two losses. They're 7-0 on the road. Very impressive, no doubt about that. The stat we gave you on Monday, Tony Romo is the only quarterback in the history of the NFL to have three consecutive road wins with three touchdown passes and zero picks. But at the Jerry Center World thing, Taj Mahal, that hasn't been the case. They've lost to a bad Washington team. They were smoked on Thanksgiving by Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. San Francisco got them, I believe that was week one.
First week, yep.
So you kind of throw that game out, because both teams, that's a kind of a feel-out week. That's not really an indicator of what's happening. And who was their other loss?
Arizona.
Well, that's that Arizona's beaten just about everybody. 11 out of 14 times they've won this year. So the division games, again, you got to pay attention to those. But the key to Dallas, it's always been for me, how Tony Romo goes, they go. You go ahead and pull me up a box score where Romo's had four picks and they've won. Or he's had three picks and they've won. It just doesn't happen. The NFL is a huge turnover league, as we know. Mm-hmm. Andrew Luck is the guy that's really proving that theory wrong recently. But as the Cowboys go, Romo goes. And without having Murray in the lineup, is he going to feel some more pressure? Because as you mentioned, Dallas isn't safe and salted in any of this. They lose out. If Dallas is in a tiebreaker with Philly, they lose. So Dallas cannot be tied with Philly at the end of the year, because Philly's got a better conference record. That's how I think that they were explaining that on, was that Sunday Night Football?
They got a better division record right now.
Well, there it is. So, but again, I've read in multiple places, if they finish tied. So my point is, Dallas has everything to play for. But as you astutely mentioned, Dallas has no problem giving up a bunch of points. And the Colts don't have any problem scoring them. And they've been quiet, and the Colts offense has been fighting with it. And the Cowboys and Colts, the interesting part of this is the Colts maybe are the team that really doesn't have anything to play for, because their mountain is awfully hard to climb. They have to have New England and Denver both lose twice. Right. They have to win twice. So Chuck Pagano came out and said earlier in the week, he goes, hey, we get paid to coach and play 16 games. We're playing 16 games. Now, you know, if something ridiculous happens, we'll – take some guys out that need to be taken out.
Sure.
But the days of resting guys
wouldn't
are over.
Wouldn't be a bad idea to sit Reggie, given what he's dealing with his triceps, stuff like that.
And he's giving the ball away. That's the other problem comes with it. He's dropping balls, and he's fumbling when he gets tackled. Mm-hmm. And that's a bad combination, because guess who that puts more pressure on? The guy under center. And the guy under center, his running game isn't alleviating any pressure. Right. His offensive line isn't alleviating any pressure. And he likes getting hit, but nobody likes getting hit that much, do they?
No, they don't. No. And I've said it frequently, and I'll say it until I'm blue in the face again, and that is we are, no pun intended, as Colts fans, extremely lucky to have a quarterback that at the moment has not gotten hurt because of it, but more importantly, seems to relish and not start to fear all of the hits. Most quarterbacks, he doesn't. Most quarterbacks, it does manage to screw them up. Now he might be speeding up a little bit, but it's not all that easy. I mean, you can't really tell that anything's happening back there, and that is unusual. So, again, it can't happen very easily this year. But at some point in time, you need to get that addressed and get him better protection. The key down the stretch here for the Colts is simply going to be, can that protection hold up at all to give him a chance? And can you take the pressure out? Can you get the ball out of his hands a little quicker? That's the one thing I think you could do is you could find a way to getting the ball back out in the flat to your running backs.
You know my favorite offense they run? Well, that hurry up. When they get up there and get to the line and get going and they just dink it and dunk it and dink it
and
dunk it.
And the defense gets tired. They're not going to hit him. I mean, it's not a bad idea. No, it's not.
And the other thing is the Colts have so many weapons offensively in numbers. Mm-hmm. You got Allen and Fleener and even Jack Doyle. You've got Reggie if he plays. T.Y. How about Akeem Nicks showing up to the party? You know what? If he fires now, I don't care what he did the first team.
No, exactly.
13 games. If Akeem Nicks finds himself into this, we've got Moncrief Hicks.
8, 9, 10 guys
in the pass
have given the ball multiple times to in a given game this year. I mean, that's the point there is that they will throw it to anybody. And so get it out of his hands and get it to those guys. Rotate some of them in and out. Absolutely. You've got to because – and here's the key, though. It's got to be out quick. Because the longer he holds on to it, the more likely it is that he's going to get hit.
Well, and the other fun part is when you get it out quickly and get it out quickly and get it out quickly, guess who keeps getting a little bit closer to the line? And then it goes T.Y. for 80 yards.
Absolutely. Guess who gets slower trying to get in there on Andrew Luck,
right?
The defensive line.
But the other point is that is another way, if your running game isn't running the ball, that you can attack in a different fashion that doesn't involve seven-step drops and throwing into eight guys in coverage or seven guys into coverage. The other thing is Trent Richardson and Dan Heron, just boys, give me 40 yards apiece.
Yeah.
Again, you don't need
to be great.
Well, Trent Richardson only has X 100 yard games in his career, none of them with the Colts. Who cares?
I don't care.
Look at the Colts' record with Trent Richardson on the team.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're going to deal with Trent Richardson and the fact that it cost you a late draft pick to get him in the offseason.
28th pick in the draft or whatever.
But for now, and I think Stephen Holder for the Indianapolis Star wrote a great article that said the things that I've been trying to tell people, and that is that Boom Heron is not blocking anybody in the backfield.
No, he's not.
But Trent Richardson has picked up defensive tackles, nose tackles, 295-pound guys that have been whiff-blocked by the center to allow Andrew Luck to throw a pass. So you keep him in there for a little bit of that. And I say it again, what I love about him that he can do, that he's good at right off the bat, is you give him a quick dump off into the flat where he's one-on-one with somebody, and more often than not, he's going to make that first guy miss.
He gets hit.
If he doesn't have three guys on him right then and there, he can make the first guy in space miss. He's not quick enough right now. He's not showing quickness enough inside between the tackles to make one guy miss because there's a lot of other guys
there. 190-pound defensive backs, it's hard to shake 240-pound linebackers.
Three of them at a time. I mean, that's what you get inside the line.
The guys on your leg, you can bust through that.
Yeah.
A little injury updates for you. Reggie Wayne is practicing for the second straight Wednesday. That's usually a rest day. These are all from Stephen Holder with the Star. T.Y. Hilton is still out, but promising. Vontae Davis was off today with a groin. This is Wednesday. Remember, Thursday is a target day for Hilton, so this shouldn't come as any surprise.
Gotcha.
And then DeMarco Murray was out catching passes, as we heard. But if he's not practicing, I'm not sure how that's all going to work itself out. And we'll talk about this when we get back. Colts defense has been pretty good of late. Chuck Pagano says this. I'll give you the quote right here. Pagano says about the offensive line, best offensive line we'll have faced to date the Dallas Cowboys. That's the Colts' next opponent.
They've made some moves there. They have dedicated some moves to their offensive line, and it's paying off in dividends. The key there will be, do the Colts make another running back look as good as DeMarco Murray, Joseph Randle? You got to hold that down, don't you?
Yep.
I mean, if you want to win this one, you got to. We got to take a quick break. More on Colts and Dallas when we get back. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Again, quick programming notes. I'll try to make them quick, but there are a bunch of them. Tennessee and Jacksonville tomorrow night here on WGCL, 8 o'clock for Thursday night football. Saturday, we've got a doubleheader, 4 o'clock, Eagles at Washington, and 7:45, San Diego at San Francisco. Sunday, we pick up the Colts at Dallas. 3:30 is a pregame for that, kickoff at 4:30, and then we will take you over to Seattle at Arizona for a great nightcap. And then Monday night, Denver at Cincinnati. So all kinds of NFL. And then, of course, don't forget high school basketball, as always, Friday night, Southport, number one in the state, coming down to face the North Cougars. Chalk Talk, 7 o'clock, tip-off, 7:30 for that.
And mark your calendars. Tomorrow morning, Indianapolis Colts playoff tickets will be available for purchase beginning at 10 a.m. Initially, tickets will be sold exclusively through Colts.com, Ticketmaster.com, and charged by phone, 800-745-3000. Once the actual date and time of the game has been determined, tickets will also be made available through the Lucas Oil Stadium ticket office and Ticketmaster ticket centers. Tickets will initially be sold at division round prices if the Colts qualify, blah, blah, blah. So, again, tomorrow's the 18th, right? 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. That's when you can go. Colts.com, Ticketmaster.com, 800-745-3000. As an affiliate of the Colts, we pass that along to you.
And before we head back to the NFL, a quick note here. Tevin Coleman continues to collect awards. He is now the sixth consensus All-American at Indiana University on the football side of the of things. Von Dunbar was one, Anthony Thompson, Bob Ravensburg, John Tavener, and Billy Hillebrand. This means the in this particular case, it's the AP, the American Football Coaches Association, the Football Writers Association of America, and the Sporting News all have named him first team
All-American. What it means is all doubt has been removed, and everybody is in agreement that he was one of the two best running backs in the country this season.
There shouldn't have been any doubt.
Deservedly so. Well, we've seen these fellas vote for other things that don't always turn out correctly, so we'll give them some credit where credit is due, but not too much.
No, not too much. Back to the NFL. Schedule for this weekend in particular, Colts at Dallas. I say it again, on the defensive side, you know, look, we've heard good things about the defense. We've heard, I'm still not that impressed on the long term. Sure. I'm impressed with what they've tried to do, which is they've thrown a lot of bodies out there. They've used a lot of rotations. They've used a lot more looks than they did the first 2 years of Chuck Pagano was here. I think it was just kind of a natural progression.
More guys healthy as well.
That's true. That's true. But it's been a natural progression. They're using a lot more packages. I'm impressed with that. I like that they're trying that. They're throwing a lot of different blitz looks out there that have confused some guys. That is all fantastic. They got beat up pretty good by New England, who went physical on them, so that's something to watch. Dallas is going to try that. I mean, that's what Dallas is going to do. They're going to say, we've got this big, huge offensive line that we've invested a bunch of money in, and we've got maybe not DeMarco Murray, but we got another guy we like just as almost as much. We're going to run it down your throat and see how you react to it. So do those packages in this particular game matter a whole hell of a lot? There's only so much I think you can confuse Tony Romo unless you are simply physically making the plays against that offensive line. So that's the whole key to me. Do those front seven guys, do they manage to get through that offensive line, both in the run and the pass game? Because I don't think it's a, you know, you throw a look at Tony that he hasn't seen before. The one good thing with Tony, if you're a Dallas fan, is he's seen just about everything.
He has. The Colts have shut down guys like Frank Gore, Marshawn Lynch. We saw last year that did happen. There's no doubting those numbers. And to be fair, the guy that really has only torched the Colts, I don't think he's carried the ball five times since then.
Jonas Gray.
The guy from New England who had a career night,
again,
and he
did. That was all football team style. That was all, give me six offensive linemen, another tight end or two, and chug, exactly just right. Churn it down your throat.
But I think Dallas's offense is a little bit more balanced than that. Romo's thrown for 3,300 yards. Obviously, Murray leads the league in rushing. They've got a ton of yards and everything else. And the good news is, if Murray doesn't play, how good that line is, we've seen that with some players before. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the line is making the back. Murray's a nice player.
It's a combination.
Don't get me wrong. It is a combination. So his replacement isn't automatically, maybe not like Wisconsin, where if you threw me or you in there, we get 2 or 3 yards of carry because the gaping holes are always
we're
there.
We're too slow to get
there. But I think the Colts can help themselves because their secondary, Dave, has played good enough You know, Vontae Davis, you don't have to give him a lot of help. You know, you got Toler and Butler and veteran guys back there, Brown and Mike Adams, and he's just you have all those guys out there. Where
Vontae and Greg Toler are on their own, and Vontae in particular. So losing one of the two of those, if Vontae can't play, that's tough.
That'll be tough. But, you're right. But they don't have to cheat in the backfield where they can maybe give the run another guy and a half or a half a guy.
They're going to take their chances out wide.
Sure.
I mean, they are. They might have to double over Dez Bryant.
And Greg Minuski's been doing this for a while. That's the good news as well. This isn't some up-and-coming coordinator that hasn't seen the likes of a Romo-type offense. And the only thing Dallas has been known for over the last 7 or 8 years, Dave, and it's been not playoff football. That's number one. And number two has been they chuck it. And they've tried to get that balance with Murray, but without him in there, do they fall into their old habits? The Colts have had problems with tight ends throughout the season. Jason Witten, he falls in that category. He's an awfully, awfully good player. Dez Bryant's a tough matchup for anybody as well. Can they keep getting pressure? Is Eric Walden going to have an he's had a great season.
Look,
can he get to the quarterback? Can they get Romo's feet happy? That's another way to get
after. Vontae Davis or Greg Toler on Dez Bryant is a fascinating matchup because Dez is as big and strong and as good as it gets right now in the NFL, and those two corners are as big as and physical as you're going to get
Davis
also.
Vontae Davis is 6'1 and 210. He's a big boy.
With Jason Witten, what you've got is you've got a big guy who isn't the most unbelievable athlete, and those are the guys that have killed the inside,
Gronkowski,
the interior linebackers.
Julie Thomas.
Well, Julian Thomas is more the fast guy.
That's what I'm talking about, athletes. Gronk's an athlete.
Gronk's silly strong also.
Witten's just a kind of a traditional tight end.
Carves out his space. I mean, he might catch a 6-yarder, an 8-yarder, exactly, but he's not going to necessarily run over you or run by you like those other two guys can. But outside of that, I mean, there's not a lot of guys that scare you. They do get the running backs involved in the pass game. It still comes down to controlling up front. Can you stop that running game? Because they're going to throw whoever the running backs are at you behind that offensive line. They've seen it on tape. A lot of teams are at the top right now. We're starting to go to the six linemen look, too. They're just running down people's throats.
As much as the defense has to play. Well, they've held up their end of the bargain quite well in the last month and a half, besides the New England game. How about the offense not digging a hole?
Yeah.
How about the offense going out? When was the last time they scored in the first quarter? It feels like it's been forever. How about a hot start, take the ball down the field, score, get a three and out and score, and then all of a sudden Dallas is running game and everything else, that game plan gets a little uncomfortable.
You can beat Jacksonville and Tennessee with pick sixes. You're not going to beat the good teams.
Cleveland, right.
Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. We'll be back Monday. Remember, NFL all weekend and high school basketball Friday night, Southport at North. And we will talk to you on Monday. You've been in the zone. Mm-hmm.